From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
Those are eider ducks. You can hear them in the fjords most mornings, moving past the shore in small rafts as they dive for mussels. They're the holy cows of Iceland, because they grow and shed the kind of valuable feathers that we stuff into high-end jackets and duvets. People collect these feathers from their nests, and a colony of nesting eiders can mean the difference between a sacred shore and an average beach. Landowners will guard the ducks 24/7 during the nesting period in order to keep them safe from their biggest threat, the Arctic fox. For foxes like this, it's a crime to exist. If you shoot a fox and cut off the tail and take that tail to the government, they'll give you a bounty of about $75. It's a program meant to protect eider ducks and livestock. So the country's foxes have learned how to make themselves scarce. They are rarely more than a distant barking from the hillside, or a splash of blood in the snow. But this is not the story of your average fox. This is the story of one who survived when he shouldn't have. A fox who took advantage of the system made to destroy him.
They can be tricky. And maybe that's the hunting instinct in these guys also. It's more exciting to hunt someone that is clever and can hide from you. And if the animal wins, he has earned it.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
a fox that came to the bait.
The podcast about
the unknown.
Iceland is the unlikely stronghold for Arctic foxes in Europe. While the rest of Scandinavia has only a few hundred foxes between them, Iceland has thousands. There's a region called the Westfjords. It juts out like fingers into the North Atlantic, holding the country's densest population of foxes. It's a famously isolated place, 5 hours from Reykjavik by car and just 40 minutes by plane, but it's best to plan for 2 days of travel because the weather can make both routes impassable. The tiny town of Sudovik sits a fjord and a half from the open ocean, just off a road that cuts through rock tunnels and avalanche debris. And I'm sitting there in Sudovik, in a gray and white building with Stephen Midgley and the taxidermied body of a three-legged fox.
It's bigger than average for sure. That's why it stood out so much to people. You know, it was really big and had 3 feet, so it was kind of like a noticeable fox. It doesn't take much to be interesting out here in the Westfjords, you know. To be given like this personalized name, you know, tripod. And it became well known. I mean, there's no other fox. It got given a name, which is obviously very rare for the foxes. Most foxes are just generic foxes that get seen and get shot, so, you know, this one done its best, at least, you know, maybe.
Tripod's story is like a game of telephone, and each retelling of it gets a little further from the truth. He was large, by fox standards, not fat, but well-built. You can see it in his wide paws, clearly meant to hold a heavy frame above the snow. His fur is a mix of gray and brown that shifts to cinnamon when his guard hairs catch the light. His mouth is clenched around a black and white seabird, a razorbill. The bird dangles in a way that hides his handicap. It's his left foreleg that's missing, a limb that's now entirely elbow.
Normally, I don't do. I skin the whole leg.
In 2014, a skilled taxidermist named Dodi Bjornsson stuffed Tripod's body. Dodi works for the Icelandic Institute of Natural History, just south of Reykjavik.
And now it's coming to the ear.
A bit tougher?
No. But if you know how
Dodi
it
is taking a scalpel to the mouth of a dead fox, a fresh one recently shot by hunters. He separates the lips from the gums to reveal a growing grimace. It's the first step for skinning the face. There's a deer skeleton in the corner with some stuffed falcons, and there's an antiseptic hum of the fridge and fluorescent lights. When Dodi has brought the fox's face to a full smile, he peels it back off the head so that it flops like a scarf around the neck. 4 years ago, when Dodi preserved Tripod, he couldn't figure out the cause of the missing limb. It might have been a birth defect, or it might have been the result of a more human injury.
And then some of the hunters, it's too far away, the distance, it's go too low, they can shoot the leg away. Yep. Some of the hunters, they use a foot trap, and if it's too strong, they break the legs, and in the end, the leg will be the only thing who will be left in the trap.
It's possible that a brush with death is what made Tripod so clever, that the suffering that cost him his leg is also what taught him to avoid the hunters waiting near the bait.
To the head here.
Dodi pulls the fox's blonde-haired skin entirely off the body and stuffs it into a plastic bag to clean later. Behind us, a fox researcher named Dr. Esther Unsteinsdottir is performing dissections.
Cut the muscles. It's easier to take the head off.
The head is the last thing she takes to clean and boil down. The lower jaw is stored in a collection with over 11,000 other specimens. From that jaw, she'll take a single tooth, the lower canine, and have it cut through the middle to count the dentin rings. Anyway. Like the trunk of a felled tree, this will tell her the age. The ceremony is the same with each fox. Esther will stop sometimes to cup one of their small faces in her gloved hands and stroke the fur. She only gets a few weeks a year to study them alive, in the Hornstrander Nature Reserve, where they're protected. Outside of there, it's hard to see a live fox in Iceland.
Nice small little female. Let's see how much she weighs.
Tripod would have come to this lab after being shot and had his own turn at the dissection table. By hanging him from a grocery scale, Esther would have found that he was 6 kilograms, or a little more than 13 pounds, which is a little less than double the average weight of most foxes.
And I find it very peculiar how big they are in this area, especially Skálavík. It's really big foxes.
I ask if what others have told me is true, that it took 3 years for the hunters to catch Tripod.
Yeah, so I heard if it's always the same one. The story was going on for 3 years. And everyone seemed to know about this three-legged fox that came to the bait.
Were they embarrassed that they couldn't get him?
I think a bit. But it's also kind of part of the myth that makes them more special than other hunters, is that they are hunting animals that are clever and can beat you sometimes. So they outfox you, kind of. So if you're after something like that, and you get it, so you're more like a hero. I'm not making little out of them. It is actually like this. They can be tricky.
A group of hunters from Belungavik are the only ones who knew Tripod alive, and they agree to meet me at a gas station just out of town. The town is 30 minutes from the Arctic Fox Center, still in the West Fjords and still remote. Only one of them, Siggi Hjartarson, speaks good English.
It's amazing that he lived that long with the three.
Now, three years we saw it, and we cannot shoot it. Mm-hmm.
They're pulling out a computer to show me Tripod. There's just four videos in all, but they're of surprisingly good quality. You can see he's healthy, despite everything. His fur has a sheen, a sort of silk refraction off the moving crest of his shoulders. When he digs, the whole arch of his body contracts to move his single foreleg. The hunters had put some fish or piece of lamb beneath the snow. They dug it down deep enough so that it would take him a minute to excavate. And if there was a hunter watching, that extra minute would have given him the extra time to take aim.
Do you know how he lost his leg?
No. There is no, we have no, we only shoot them. No one, it is illegal to have a, you see,
yeah.
Traps.
Yeah.
We never use that.
He pantomimes the closing jaws of a leg hold trap.
We just shoot them, and they are dead instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someone shoot it off, maybe.
Could be.
That could be.
No.
Oh, yeah.
The man who killed Tripod is named Johan Hannibalsson. He's a sheep farmer, tall and quiet, standing a bit behind us with the other hunter. He has a somber look about him, though perhaps this is just the way his trimmed white beard tends to tug at the corners of his mouth. He doesn't speak much English, but from Siggi, I gather he's headed out hunting foxes that evening, and he invites me along. We drive as far as the road goes until the snow declares it impassable. Johan pulls over. We unload the snowmobile. The sun's setting as we take the summer road at full tilt, the traction belt busting through rime and ice as we descend into a seaside valley. I expect to be crouched in a hut for hours, waiting for the foxes to come. But instead, we set up two chairs in the second floor of a summer house, overlooking a scaffold that holds wind-powered lights. This is Siggy's summer house, and a place where Johan has hunted many times before. They put down bait even when they're not there to help the foxes get used to the spotlight and the house while no one's in it to scare them off. Johan has buried a piece of lamb in the snow, and as the night settles, the light illuminates the spot. I find it very telling that Johan brings with him just two bullets, a testament to his accuracy. One is chambered in his rifle and the other waits in his breast pocket. I have to turn off my phone and cover the light of my recorder with a glove just in case a fox approaching the bait catches sight of it through the window, 30 meters away. A storm blows in and then out. The wind rocks the foundation of the house for 2 of the 4 hours we sit there in the bitter cold, waiting. And then, a fox. Skulking in, his silhouette cut by slanting snow, smaller than Tripod but still big, as far as foxes go. He digs frantically for the bait, perhaps sensing that something is different. Johan moves with quiet restraint, opening a small window in the glass where he can poke the muzzle of his rifle through. When Johan goes to collect the fox from his hunt, he pulls it from the fabric of freshly fallen snow and holds it up by the tail to show me. He looks quite proud, I think, but it's hard to see. There's just the light of his headlamp and the bait lamp, and a faint lick of green aurora in the northern sky. The wind has picked up again, throwing fists of snowflakes through the light until the headlamp dies and we head back to the house and the snowmobile in the dark. He ties the fox to the back of the snowmobile like an extra bag. Another dead fox, another $75. It's one less thing for him to worry about as the lambing season approaches. On the beach, at least for that night, the eider ducks will go undisturbed. Three years of Johan and the others waiting like this, in the blizzarding black, thinking about that fox they've heard of but never quite seen in person, wondering if it will come, knowing for certain that if it does, they will be the ones who have the patience, the skill, the quiet restraint to get the job done. But Tripod was only two. This is according to Esther's records from his teeth, from the canine tooth plucked out of his lower jaw and the dentin rings within that tooth that count the years like a tree. In ecology, it's one of the most accurate aging methods you can use. What if the stuffed fox at the museum wasn't Tripod at all? What if that fox was just a three-legged coincidence? And what if the real Tripod, now dull-toothed and ancient, was there that night too with me and Johan, hiding in the snow, watching the duller fox take the bait, knowing full well that the rifle awaited whomever ate the lamb, waiting to hear the snowmobile recede into the night before he took his dinner alone.
Megan Parra produced this episode of Here Be Monsters. Megan is a science illustrator and a journalist from Portland, Oregon. But currently, she's in Iceland, living just down the street from a sheep. This sheep. Megan's working on a video documentary right now about Arctic foxes, and you can find out more at icelandfox.com or on our website, hbmpodcast.com. Also up on our website, Megan sent me some videos of the Northern Lights, which I turned into GIFs. We've also got some pictures of Tripod and some other Icelandic foxes. So again, we're at hbmpodcast.com. My name is Jeff Entman, and I edited this episode with help from Bethany Denton. Okay, now in completely separate news, I just wanted to announce something fun. If you live in the Boston area and you would like a copy of our Here Be Monsters Meet poster, well, now you can get it shipped to you for free. That's right, if you would like me to ride my bike to you with a meet poster, just head over to our website, hbmpodcast.com/store, and buy a meet poster. You'll have to pay the shipping up front, but once we arrange everything via email, I'll go ahead and refund you that money. So again, if you want me to ride my bike with a meet poster to you in the Boston area, just go over to our website, buy a meet poster. We'll get sorted out. The one catch here is that I only have about 5 of these at my house currently, so this is definitely a wall supplies last offer. And if you want to know if there's still any left, you can always send us an email. That's hbmpodcast@gmail.com. Okay, music on this episode came from The Black Spot and Cerocel. Here Be Monsters is a part of the independent producer project from KCRW, where Kristen Lepore is our manager and Nick White is our editor. And since Nick never really gets to talk on the show, we actually had him record himself saying hello, just so you can hear what his voice sounds like. Here it is. All right. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.